just want to say I've enjoyed this, and I appreciate the people who've called. I appreciate everybody who's tuned in. And if you haven't supported KBOO this year, I think it might be a good time to do that. Go to kboo.fm and click on that old donate button. We are your community radio listener-sponsored station. That's how we keep going. And we really appreciate that support. And thank you, everybody, for listening. Ta-ta. Thank you, Sonia. Look right now, and you will see we are only here by the skin of our teeth as it is. So take heart and take care of your link with life. It's beautiful if you got the sense to take care of your source of perfection. Mother Nature, she's the daughter of God and the source.
Homelessness is traumatic. I think we need to first and foremost put that on the table. It is inhumane. It is something that nobody should have to experience. And it's something that way too many of our neighbors are forced to do every single night for lack of affordable housing and lack of space to get them in and keep them stable.
Welcome to Inside Washington County with Rob Solomon. We feature interviews with leaders in the community focusing on issues important to Washington County.
Today we have part two of our conversation on affordable housing and homelessness. Welcome to Inside Washington County. I'm Rob Solomon. Thank you for joining us today. Today we have three guests with us. We have Cole Merkel, who is the Deputy Director of Outreach and Engagement at Here Together, a Portland-based nonprofit that helps find solutions for the systemic crises of homelessness, including issues of housing affordability and equity. Nathan Teske is also with us. Nathan is the executive director of Bienestar, a Washington County-based nonprofit that provides affordable housing for primarily Latinx residents of Washington County. He has over 15 years of experience improving outcomes for immigrant and low-income communities. Also joining us is Cadence Petros. Cadence is the Division Director for the City of Beaverton. Her department oversees the development of affordable housing projects within Beaverton. She has served the City of Beaverton for 7 years, first working as Assistant City Attorney before progressing to her current role in the Development Division. The community response, the work that you folks are doing, is really impressive. But you know, there's still some people out there that are saying, what homelessness? There's no homelessness problem, and if there is, it's their fault. They should just pull up their bootstraps and get their act together. What do you say to people who you hear saying that when you can see how important and pervasive this crisis is?
I think I want to actually chime in and say that what we saw in both our polling and focus groups was actually something different. We actually saw voters have a much more nuanced understanding of homelessness than you would think. In focus groups, and you know, specifically in Clackamas County, we had white, non-college educated men who, when we asked, so, what's the cause of homelessness? The answer was actually, well, it's pretty complicated. When we gave voters a list of ways throughout all three counties in the poll, a list of ways that homelessness could be addressed, mental health services and increasing affordable housing popped at the top. But even before that, when we asked them what solutions they would bring to the table, most of them had an idea that either was a systemic idea or a service-based idea. 80% of folks responded with something, and only about 10% of it was more strict focused. Stop giving away so many free services. So I think that we're actually at a point where we've reached a tipping point in our communities where people understand the nuance of this.
That's actually quite exciting. Do you think that's different from 10 years ago?
I think it's different than from when I started this work, absolutely. And I think that speaks volumes to advocates, to electeds, and to so many people truly being impacted by this crisis. It's something that, you know, I think everybody in the region knows somebody who's had a difficult time with a housing placement, who's had a difficulty with housing, and has either been housing unstable or been very close to experiencing homelessness. I don't really buy at this point that folks are just not wanting to engage. I think that we see solutions and that people are asking for them, they're demanding them.
I'm pleased to hear that. Is the housing that's subsidized by the county, city, or any level of government truly stable, particularly for developments that rely on private ownership? What policies or statutes, at least outside of rent control, prevent those living in low-income houses from being exploited or taken advantage of by their landlord?
When you do this, whether you're a private for-profit entity or a nonprofit like my organization, you are signing up for a whole list of regulations.
Yes.
When you own this. you don't own your asset in the same way that a purely private developer owns. Meaning that, for example, you have things recorded on the deed and the title of the properties that prohibit you, for example, from raising rents or selling it on the open market. So you're signing up for a long-term commitment, whoever you are, when you take this funding. And typically, just to give an example, you're also signing up for annual site inspections. In our case, Oregon Housing is the main regulatory body, Oregon Housing and Community Services. They come around once a year to each of our properties. They look at physically at the property to make sure it's in decent shape and not breaking their standards. They pull files on our clients. They look to see that we're only serving eligible households, mostly meaning that we're not serving households that are over income for what the funding is for, but other things too, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. We're in regular communication with Washington County, in our case, Washington County, the City of Hillsborough, Oregon Housing, almost weekly, certainly monthly, on various aspects of how we're handling our housing. So you can't, if you tried to suddenly increase the rents or do something, it wouldn't work. If there was somehow an unscrupulous affordable housing developer or something, like, it really wouldn't work. They'd get booted out of the industry pretty fast.
So as long as there's public involvement, there's enough monitoring that helps to increase the security?
Absolutely. I mean, and you'll hear my friends in the industry sometimes complain about how much monitoring there is, right? Because
right?
There's a lot. But the reason for the monitoring is that the original investment was made to serve a particular population, and the monitoring is to ensure that it's being done.
I'm going to address this to Cole, because Here Together seems to take a look more at the services that folks need. And there's some concern about when people who have experienced homelessness for any significant period of time, and they have an opportunity to transition to some form of residence, rental, whatever it is, that there are issues in that transition. Could you discuss some of those issues and what Here Together suggests we as a community can be doing about that?
Homelessness is traumatic. I think we need to first and foremost put that on the table. It is inhumane. It is something that nobody should have to experience. And it's something that way too many of our neighbors are forced to do every single night for lack of affordable housing and lack of space to get them in and keep them stable. When it comes to getting somebody into housing who's experienced chronic homelessness, there are a lot of things that in unpacking that trauma, potentially recovering from an addiction, potentially working finally to manage health in ways that people who are in that momentary moment by moment need can't necessarily do. It takes a lot to be able to help get somebody stabilized. What I do know, based on my years of working with people experiencing homelessness, is that case management is a key way to help somebody get stabilized. So not only getting them into the place, ensuring that they have enough money in rent subsidy to be able to get into it and stay in for more than 6 months, because right now we're often seeing people fail out of the system because they can't continue to pay or their subsidy runs out, but that we actually have long-term subsidies and that we have case managers who can help people navigate the system to get their health back in order, to, you know, if they're at such a point, be able to work toward finding a job, and really helping stabilize those folks. We have seen, again, through our polling and our focus groups, that voters in the region recognize that case management is an integral and crucial way to be able to keep people in their affordable housing and help people transition from the trauma that is homelessness.
Hence the optimism that there may be monies available down the road, at least, to support that.
Well, we got to take it to the voters first.
Understood.
The voters have to lead on it.
And the voters have to understand, and I'm very excited and enthused to hear that there seems to be more understanding over time as the crisis develops. Nathan, did you have something you wanted to add?
No, I echo everything Cole says. I think for my organization, we do serve most of our households with one person at least having income from work. So in other words, not somebody depending on, let's say, Social Security or disability only. And those families are very much, in most cases, eager to move out of our housing if they can. So we've tried to structure programs to allow them to buy a home if they can, to build savings, to get their kids to go to college if they have kids, those kinds of things, so that either they themselves or at least their kids will not be living in affordable housing. That's in our case.
So. Understood.
Yeah.
So this is a really intense crisis. It's upon us, and nobody has mentioned yet the fact that we are expecting between, depending on who you talk to, 20 to 50,000 more people in the next few years, 20 years at most, coming into our county. It's a very pressing concern. Well, in an op-ed in the Oregonian, that newspaper, in December, Metro President Lynn Peterson suggested that alongside its passage of the affordable housing bond measure, Metro's also working with city governments in the counties to streamline the construction and permitting process. We referred to that earlier. But is there any possibility that despite the urgent need, that streamlining this process can create more problems than solutions?
Well, like I said earlier, like most public policy discussions, there are tensions, and you have to reach an appropriate balance point for your place and time.
Okay.
And so, on the one hand, there are reasons why we have permits and regulations, and that's to preserve the public. And so, of course, you could tip so far over in the streamlining that essentially you don't have that overview and regulatory framework. That's very unlikely to happen, but that's an extreme result. And so I think realistically, any streamlining that is done for the permitting process will be well thought out, will make sure that it preserves the public good, and will also make sure that in this time of intense development, mm-hmm. where everybody is pushing to build all sorts of things, not just housing, but schools and office buildings. The development that you've seen, not just in Washington County, but region-wide, is pretty significant. So you have a finite number of construction contractors, a finite number of engineers, and a finite number of architects that can do all of that work. And so part of the role of the city government is to make sure that all the T's are crossed and the I's are dotted. And so that work will continue and say, maybe just go back to the drawing board a little bit and make sure that you've thought about these four things and then continue through the process. And I think that will happen.
We'll try and make the process faster, but not at the expense of public safety.
Correct.
That balance will be important to maintain. I certainly understand that. What is the one major thing you think, this is addressed to all of you, excuse me, what is the one major thing that you think will change regarding affordable housing in Washington County or the metro area in the next 10 years?
Well, I think you're going to see a lot more of it. And neighbors may not always even be aware that that's what it is, because I think you're going to see a lot of very nice projects develop that won't stand out as not, market rate housing. So, but I think you're going to see a lot more of it. I think, Cadence, you probably know the number, but the number of units countywide that are to be built under the Metro Bond is 1,400? I don't know. It's a very large number. Maybe it's more than that. Across these three jurisdictions, Beaverton, mm-hmm. Hillsborough, and the county. So I think that's one thing. There'll just be more of it. Will it keep pace? I don't know for sure, but I think it'll make a big dent.
I wonder, though, when you said that you wonder if people will even notice, if there's a lot of infill housing in order to generate more units, I think people would notice.
People will notice that, but what I meant was they may not know that it's affordable housing as opposed to a private
apartment.
Yeah, I think you're right, people will notice, and I think the pace of development that Cadence mentioned, you know, that has made some people uncomfortable, right? Mm-hmm. And it's a change. It's a change to the county. We talked earlier about this zoning on single-family lots, right? Single-family. You know, some people are not going to like that because that's their history and that's what they've had, perhaps. And and that will change, I think, over time, right? And that will be driven both by this public sector work, but also private sector. If a builder can build four homes on one lot instead of one home, you know, most of the time they're probably going to build four homes, even though they're smaller homes, right?
Understood. Yeah. The financial aspect is a driver, but also you're contributing to the community by providing more affordable units. So it's a win-win, so to speak.
Okay. When it comes to that, there will be more units there. Between the Portland and Metro Housing Bond will be upwards of 5,300 new units of affordable housing, and that is absolutely crucial in this. But with more housing, we'll have more need, and that's why I firmly believe that services are going to be so essential to help people transition in, stay in, and be stable. And what we need right now, if we want to be successful with these units in the next 10 years, is for our elected leaders to lead and bring this initiative to voters.
Do you think by 10 years, I mean, hopefully it'll happen sooner if it happens, but do you think it will happen within the 10-year time frame I threw out?
I think we need to have it now, and we need to have it in 2020. And I absolutely think that we have the crucial pieces right now, but we need our leaders to continue to step up and lead.
Understood. Candace, same question. What do you think it's going to look like 10 years from now?
I'm going to give you the typical lawyer answer. It depends. Because we have a couple possible futures in front of us. The Metro Housing Bond and the Portland Bond are good things. Absolutely. They're critical. No matter how many, 5,300 is 3,500 for the Metro Bond total. That's not enough. That's not even close to being enough based on today's population, notwithstanding the folks who are coming.
Yes.
And so depending on how sort of that wage-rent imbalance goes, and depending on the interventions that our voters and our elected officials put forth, we will either have a bigger problem or we'll have a smaller problem. And so I think it's really important in this conversation to manage expectations, that the work that we're all doing is good. We think it's very important work. And the strides we've made in the last couple of years dwarf the strides we've made probably in the last 15 years. And that is absolutely true and deserves, I think, recognition. And if we want to see a noticeable difference in public homelessness, a visible homelessness, and if we want kind of the more hidden strain that many, many, many more families experience every day that you don't see, we're going to need to have more interventions. And that's going to mean more funding of both services and also the bricks and mortar, because this problem is not going to go away without additional work on all of our parts.
I was wondering, what are the issues other than the lack of available housing that contribute to so much homelessness in our region?
Well, we are operating in a safety net that's been cut to the bone. And so it's not just homelessness, but it's food insecurity. It's folks needing help with utility assistance. You know, having one utility shut off can lead to a for-cause eviction. I think the other thing that's really important to remember is that when it comes to mental health and addiction treatment, The state of Oregon is near the bottom of the 50. And we as a state need to invest in resources so that people who want to get clean can get clean right now, not get on a list and wait for 3 months, 3 years before they can get into addiction service and treatment, but right now. And so that's one thing that we're hoping to be able to address through the Here Together Coalition.
Sounds great, and I appreciate the importance of it. Anybody want to add to that? Other contributors to homelessness other than mental health, substance abuse issues, and lack of available housing?
I'll add that we live in a society where just plain old economic instability could leave any one of us homeless if a bad thing happens.
So many of us are living paycheck to paycheck.
I think most of us are, to one degree or another. And so I think Cole mentioned that earlier about why he thinks that perception is changing. And I think many more people are recognizing their own fragility in our economic situation. And so many of the folks that call the city that are either experiencing homelessness or are about to, many of them are seniors who've been living on fixed incomes that have not kept pace with all of the costs associated with staying alive, not just housing. Many of them have had medical events that cause them to lose their job or bills that make them go bankrupt. Mm-hmm. All of these things can lead someone to losing everything, and then housing is just one of the everythings that they've lost.
But what I'm hearing from all of you is that it's important for us to realize that homelessness is not just directed at some segment of society. Anybody can find themselves homeless and not be prepared. But what are your agencies doing to help the folks that are currently dealing with homelessness while we are all working to try and find them places to live? What's Here Together doing?
Here Together specifically is working toward finding those solutions when it comes to funding. I'll speak, though, for the organization that I worked for proudly for 8 years, Street Roots, which offers individuals who are experiencing homelessness and severe poverty an opportunity at income. Mm-hmm. So every single week, Street Roots prints a high-quality newspaper publication that focuses on issues of social justice. More than 150 individuals who are experiencing homelessness or poverty buy it and sell it throughout the metro region on a weekly basis and have immediate access to income. They buy it for a quarter, sell it for a dollar, any profit is theirs to keep.
Yes, my understanding is that you actually sell it for whatever the donator is willing to give.
I think you've talked to some very compelling Street Roots vendors, because that's not actually the rule, but I'm glad that they're making it happen.
It's interesting. I've actually seen it, if I may, at the Beaverton Market. I have seen the magazine or newspaper being purchased for anywhere from a quarter to $5.
Sure.
So, and I think that's great.
Yeah, recoup the cost at the very least, and hopefully get a tip in the process. So I will say, you know, I will always be an advocate for Street Roots, and anytime you see a vendor throughout Washington County, Beaverton Farmers Market, I believe we have some folks at the Hillsborough Markets as well. Make sure to give a dollar or more, empower somebody to earn their own income.
Again, what would Bienestar be doing to help those people that are currently, I don't want to use the word stuck in homelessness, but are currently existing in homelessness?
Yeah. Bienestar mostly works with partnerships to address this issue. We're developing a partnership with HomePlate, which is a youth service agency that we're excited about. We have connections with Luke Dorf Mental Health and Sequoia Mental Health that also work with this community. My organization does not directly have a program in the way that Cole described to serve people currently experiencing homelessness. And so we want to build more housing, and of course we want to make that housing available to whoever needs it and qualifies. But we mostly work with partnerships at this point.
No, and I appreciate the partnerships that you just outlined. And when I look at the city of Beaverton, you're not really an agency, but how does the city support those that are currently homeless?
We have several programs. So on the federally funded side, we have a community development block grant program that's about $750,000 plus a year. some of which we are able to target towards combating homelessness. So we don't have a permanent homeless shelter in city limits, but we provide funding to shelters that are directly outside our city limits to that serve Beaverton residents. And so we do that on an annual basis. We provide emergency rent assistance through community action. We have a severe weather shelter. So November 1st to March 1st or March 30th, on certain days of the week, we coordinate with other severe weather shelters in the county to ensure that somewhere in the county a shelter is open every day. And should the temperatures dip below freezing, we activate additional days. So that's an important piece of work that we do. We also have piloted what's called a safe parking program, where a few locations throughout the city were able to pair kind of safe places for people who are living in their automobiles or RVs to park, have access to storage, to have access to social services for that wraparound care that's so necessary, and then of course bathroom facilities. And so it's a pilot right now. We're looking to see how, if we can expand it in conjunction with Just Compassion, our nonprofit that is helping us work through those issues. And then we have a part-time social worker at the Beaverton Main Library who has hours to help people experiencing homelessness connect to other services. That's part of the reason why case management is so helpful, is because there are so many different places people have to go to get different levels of help for different things. And having somebody who knows the roster and can help essentially triage what the needs are and help people access those services that are already available if you know where they are is very important.
Oh, it's excellent. You've got a connector. Yeah.
That's exactly right.
That's excellent. People need places to live. We've had an engaging conversation. I thank you all. Before we close for the day, is there anything important that we've missed that any one of you would like to add to make sure our listeners are as up on the situation as possible?
You will sometimes hear people say that the problem is caused by the urban growth boundary.
Mm-hmm.
We can't, and certain kind of developer will say it this way, like they just want to build whatever they want, wherever they want, whenever they want. And my response to that is, look at all the other cities around the country that have similar problems to Portland that do not have urban growth boundaries.
Mm-hmm.
They have very similar problems, very similar homeless situations, a similar shortage of affordable housing units without the boundary. So I really think that's a canard.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll put that out there.
I concur.
And anybody else have anything to add?
I just want to make sure that anytime we're having a conversation like this, and I think that my colleagues at the table have done a really good job at this, but for listeners especially, when we talk about homelessness, when we talk about affordable housing, we need to not get lost in statistics and remember that ultimately this is about people. This is about people dying on the streets of our community, people who are suffering because we as a community have decided that we're not going to prioritize this. The time is now to prioritize this. We have momentum and we need to move forward.
Thank you very much, Cole. I appreciate it. Cole Merkel from Here Together, and Nathan Teske from Bienestar, Cadence Petros from the City of Beaverton. Folks, thank you all very much. This is an incredibly serious problem. I appreciate the time you've devoted to us. I want to take a moment to thank Shauna Muckel, our intern, for some really great research. And folks, if you want to comment, if you want to reach any of these people through our website, that's insidewashco.org. Thank you very much.
Thank you for listening to Inside Washington County with Rob Solomon. Go to our website, insidewashco.org, to contact us or leave comments on this interview. This series is produced by Rick Paulson.
You are tuned to listener-supported community radio, KBOO Portland.
Good morning, everybody in the world. You know, we're broadcasting Culture in Motion, yet another episode. I've got a very special guest today, comedian by the name of Curtis Cook. And my co-host Ryan and I are gonna
interview
Curtis. And thank you for tuning in. You're listening to KBOO.FM, Cable Community Radio 90.7 FM. This is Culture in Motion. I'm your host, Mike Crenshaw. This is a show where we talk about the intersection between art, culture, politics, music, and activism. How you guys doing today?
Yeah, I'm doing all right. You know, it's hot up here in Portland, so we're kind of and you're in what, LA, Curtis?
Yeah, I'm down in LA.
How's the weather?
The weather? I don't know. I haven't been outside my house in weeks. It's sunny.
Sure.
So Curtis, you're a stand-up comic. What else would you describe yourself as in your in your elevator pitch?
Yes, I guess stand-up comic. I've done some writing. I've pretended to know how to act before, but mostly just stand-up.
Right on. So I'm curious, Ryan, you being a stand-up comic, I'd love for you to lead the interview because you and Curtis are coming from the same kind of professional environment. Y'all know more about y'all's skills.
Well, Curtis is like 20 steps above me in the whole stand-up thing. He's the guy I go to and ask for questions about writing and things like that. He's a legit legit pro, and one of my favorite comics from the Portland area and moved out of here. I was fortunate enough to be on an open mic with him last year, pre-COVID, of course, and at the local comedy club, and just was reminded about how great he is. And what else have you written on, Curtis? Like, you've written on some Comedy Central stuff, like what?
Well, sure, man. First, thank you for the kind words. That was very sweet of you. But I think you overestimated me.